some coconuts to those countries in order to imbibe it to those countries so that the white people's violence. What I'm saying is they would have to go through a course. They would have to go through a course of orientation and rehabilitation before they leave the show. Because they ain't going to have that nonsense where white people in black skins are going to those countries in order to recolonize those countries. That's not what we need. So that those are the parameters that I'm setting. I'm talking about a long-term thing. I'm not talking about any quick fix where somebody could jump on a boat tomorrow and end up in any country. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about reparations, and as a part of that, this is what we're putting forward. I make no apology whatsoever for raising the issue. Since the issue has been raised, I am amazed at the amount of support that I'm getting from ordinary people. Something I've had about 300 to 400 left, and 80% of the people support me and are asking how they can get involved in the reparations movement, etc. There are a number of people who have vested in this. People who, for whatever reason, don't want these issues to be discussed. And what I'm saying is that as black people, we have every right to discuss these matters. We don't have to ask permission from anybody. We don't care what any fascist says or does, because they'll do it anyway. They'll say what they want to say anyway. So I'm not, my brain isn't controlled by Winston Churchill, by Enoch Powell or anybody. I don't wake up in the morning and say, look, I've got to make a speech, I better see what I'm writing because Mr. Powell might be upset. That's not my game. Or Mr. Powell might support what I'm doing. That is business. Right? So that I'm not going to be dictated to by anyone. I'm not going to be gagged by anyone. And last of all, as a member of parliament, I will raise those issues that affect my constituents in whatever form I can. I mentioned those things at the beginning of the meeting so that we can be clear what we're talking about. And I just want to say that as far as I'm concerned, the people see the timing is wrong, etc. I will argue that it wasn't my fault for the timing. You have to blame the voice for that. But what I'm saying is that we need to start discussing these serious issues. I know that in the Caribbean, people are crying out for people, middle management, people with skilled labor, etc. In Africa, they're crying out for that. When Nelson Mandela, when I spoke to Mandela when I went to South Africa in February of this year, they said to me that, you know, they said they've got a lot of comrades who can speak well. They're very good political. You can wake them up at 5 o'clock in the morning and they give you a fiery political speech with a lot of rhetoric. But you ask them to go look at the computer to do something for you, they can't do. Because the Bantu education system, what the Bantu education system did to them was that they trained them, they could speak English and so on. Some people were teachers, but they didn't train them to be engineers. They didn't train them to be doctors. They didn't train them, they trained them to be lawyers, yes, but they didn't train them to be technicians. So that they're terribly short of people with those types of skills. The same thing in Namibia, the same thing in Africa, because there's been a brain drain out of Africa into this country to America and everywhere else. I'm saying let's reverse that brain drain. I think that if there are people in this country who are on the dole, who've got skills, rather than sitting in this country and on the dole, going to the betting shop every day and messing around, they should be going to those countries in order to use their skills. I'm saying that the British government has part payment, just a part payment, because there's a lot of other things that we want. We want them to return the artifacts that they stole. When I get to the House of Commons, the Queen is going to open the House of Commons, the State Opening of Parliament in November, and she'll sit on the throne in the House of Lords, and you'll see the television, you'll see all these big diamonds and stones parking in front. They were stolen from Africa. They should be returned, right? That's what I mean. World order, where it's going to be every man and woman for him or herself. We have a right to fight, to protect ourselves, and to protect Africa and the Caribbean specifically. So those are the things that I'm saying, friends, and if I think that most people agree with those things. And if you do, then help us join the reparations movement. We've got the people, luckily enough, with all this kerfuffle, reparations have been put right at the end of the agenda. Thank God. So we should seize this opportunity and move forward on it. Thank you very much.
Sam, United States of America in 1864. When we are talking about reparations, one of the first questions people ask us, and not just Europeans, but many of our own people, why are we talking about these things after such a long time? Now, many of you here are people with backgrounds which took the Bible very seriously. So you know the term Sodom and Gomorrah. We still remember what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah after several thousand years. What happened to slavery and colonialism makes Sodom and Gomorrah look like a thunder school. We cannot afford not to remember what happened during slavery and colonialism, whether in the next 100 years, 500 years, or 10,000 years. The Jews, who lost 6 million of their people in 1,000 years, in 2,000 years, in 3,000 years, those monuments to the Holocaust, Jewish children will still be taught what the Germans did to their people. The Jews still talk about what the Egyptians and the Philistines did to their people 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago. Why are we now being asked to be silent after 100 years? Okay, are we saying that we are not as good as the Jews or as any other member of the human race? What has happened to us over the 500, 600 years of slavery and colonialism? This is part of history. This history has never been addressed. What was done to us during this period has never been accepted. We might have been free in theory, we remain enslaved in practice. The people who committed the atrocity against us have never accepted that they did wrong. They have never apologized. They have never compensated. Okay. Why? The reason is they did not regard us as human beings in the 15th century, the 16th century. They do not regard us as human beings in the 20th century. And if we do not do something about it now, they will not regard us as human beings in the 21st century. Each time a European was not accepted for humanity, sees us in the streets of Europe, they'll always think that we are here as refugees. We are here to reap where we have not sown. We are here to take from them what is theirs. We must remind these people of our history and their history. But first of all, we must remind ourselves of our history, because we, regardless of how black we are, if we are blacker than midnight and we do not accept our history, then we might as well be the same color of Winston Churchill or Jean-Marie Le Pen or any of the other people who say that we have no right to be here. We should be thrown out of this country and back to the jungle where we're supposed to have come from. In The Guardian of the 9th of October of this year, there was a list of all the people who apologized for the crimes they committed against other people. Boris Yeltsin on the 12th of October of this year said, as President of Russia and on behalf of the Russian people and government, I would like to express my apology for these inhumane acts. This he said in Japan when he apologized because 600,000 Japanese prisoners of war were mistreated by the Russians and 60,000 of them died. The Japanese, when the British prisoners of war complained about their treatment by the Japanese in the Second World War, the Japanese Prime Minister said, on the 20th of September, 1993, "I took this opportunity to express my deep remorse, as well as apologize for the fact that Japan's past actions had inflicted deep wounds on many people, including the former prisoners of war." This was Prime Minister Morihiro Ozukawa, who was telling John Major, Prime Minister, who raised the issue about the British prisoners of war. Then, on the 29th of April, 1993, F.W. de Klerk talked about apartheid. Of course, he didn't say very much. "If I could do anything about it, I would have liked to have avoided it. Yes, we are sorry. It was like you were putting teeth out of the man, but at least he said sorry. And for that we have to, well, say, all right, thank you." Then the Australian Prime Minister on the treatment of Australian Aborigines in December 1992. "We took the traditional land and smashed the traditional way of life. We committed the murders. It was our ignorance and prejudice and failure to imagine these things." And today, in the newspapers, or yesterday, I read there was some settlement which recognized that 200 years ago, Australia belonged to people who were living there for thousands of years, and that history did not begin when the Europeans came to Australia. So they accepted that the indigenous Australians had a right to their land, and at least this is a form of apology. On the 14th of December 1970, the late Chancellor Willy Brandt knelt before one of the monuments to the German inhumanity to the Jews, and he apologized on behalf of the German people. "I wanted, on behalf of our people, to ask for court pardon for the terrible crime that was carried out in Germany's misused name," Chancellor Willy Brandt, after kneeling before the memorial to the dead of the war forgetters on the 14th of December, 1974. "Why has no European statesman or stateswoman said sorry for hundreds of millions of Africans that were enslaved, raped, tortured, brutalized, and killed? Why to this day have Africans and people of African descent not been compensated for the crimes of slavery and colonialism?" Europeans in their history books, they still tell us that what the Europeans did to us was part of the civilizing elite and white man's burden. Can you imagine Chancellor Kohl, despite the fact that he's very right-wing, can you imagine Chancellor Kohl, or even Schröder, the leader of the extreme right-wing Republican Party in Germany, coming up and saying that the Holocaust was a means of making the Jews civilized? But we are being told that we live in the ghettos, we live in underdeveloped countries, we have famine, we have this and that, because there is something wrong with our genes, and we are lazy, and we are this and we are that, and we need Europeans to straighten us out. On the 1st of August 1988, Richard Hart, the brilliant revolutionary nationalist, gave a lecture in the Islington Town Hall celebrate the 150th anniversary of the abolition of slavery in the Anglophone Caribbean in 1838. Now, Richard Hart, as well as Eric Williams and Walter Rodney and Basil Davidson and many others, have talked about the fantastic wealth that was produced for Europe by the slave trade and colonialism, and the poverty Africa and Africans in the diaspora. Now, today, we still hear the names of the great slave owning families, such as Barclays, Lloyd, and other individuals which were involved in the slave trade and dominate the financial centers of Europe. We know their official history. We know the great houses and mansions they live in. Do we know the name of a single slave from a single village anywhere in Africa that made the wealth of these people possible? Can we name a single slave? Can we name a single of our ancestors who made the fantastic wealth of these countries possible? In this little book, The Abolition of Slavery by Richard Hart, he mentions some of the facts about what slavery meant for us and for our ancestors. In the process of capture, up to 50% of the people were killed. In other words, to get 500 slaves, you had to kill 500 people. So you go to a village with a population of 1,000. You kill 500 and you take out 500. In the process of capture, 50% were killed. Another 13-24% perished on the Atlantic crossing. 3% died in the Caribbean ports while awaiting sail. And over 30% died in the year-long process of seasoning. Seasoning was the process in which slaves were broken in, like the breaking wild animals. You see, when the American cowboys captured wild horses, they had to break them in. They had to tame them. In that process, many of these horses died. We were treated worse than the cowboys treated the wild horses. We were treated almost as badly, or as badly as the cowboys treated the so-called American Indians. So atrociously were the slaves treated on the plantations that they died faster than they could be reproduced. Their numbers had to be constantly replenished by fresh intakes from Africa. Okay, the calculation was that should we feed these people, should we treat them well so that they will live longer? And they said no. It's much more cost efficient. Treat them as badly as possible, work them as hard as possible, let them die as quickly as possible, and buy new ones from Africa. Although Hart estimates that 800,000 slaves were imported into Jamaica over a period of nearly 150 years, and that they bred prolifically because, you know, you bred human beings just the way you breed animals, only 823,827 slaves survived when the trade was abolished in 1838. So in an early application of market forces, experts estimated that it was cheaper to purchase fresh slaves than to treat the ones they owned so well that they would live longer. A recent Nobel laureate for economics, Robert Polder, he won the Nobel Prize partly for a book called Time on the Cross, which argued that slavery was extremely inefficient and extremely profitable. And for this he was given half of the Nobel Prize, which is about almost £300,000. They could have asked us that and we could have told them that for free. Slavery and the colonialism which followed represent the greatest transfer of resources from one people to another in human history. There is absolutely no doubt about that. According to Richard Hart, slave owners of the Anglophone Caribbean received £16.573 billion in compensation for the 667 slaves they possessed on 31 July 1834. When free labor and other benefits that slave owners were given, after the actual abolition was supposed to take place, the total package amounts to over £20 million. If you convert £20 million into today's money, and if you take into consideration the Spanish Caribbean, the French Caribbean, the United States, and South America, the amount of money that was taken out of Africa and put into Europe impossible to calculate. Try to even consider that 20 million pounds for just the slaves in Jamaica, Barbados, and the other Anglophone Caribbean territories. Calculate that in today's money, and the $300 billion that Africa is supposed to owe to Europe and America. It's like, let me see if I have any here. It's like one thing. Okay, so as Bernie said, we don't owe them. They owe us. Yet, despite the horrors of the slave trade and colonialism, the suffering of African people today is in many respects even worse than during the darkest days of slavery and colonialism. During the days of slavery and colonialism, we did not have the same type of situation we now have in Angola and Mozambique and Somalia. They just estimated that over 35,000 people died in Quito alone, one small town in Angola. UNITA was given arms by the same people who say that we have no right to be in the United Kingdom or France or anywhere in Europe. Jonas Savimbi was received by the same leaders in the White House and in number 10 down the street, who are saying that, oh, you people, you know the way they say you people. So today we are facing even worse crisis than during the times of slavery and colonialism. We have the problem in Africa, we also have the problem in the United Kingdom and France. We cannot walk safely on the streets because there are many people who think that they have the same right to be with us on the streets of London that they did with us in the villages of Africa in the 13th century. The burden of $300 billion that weighs down our continent far more cruelly than the ball and chain which once held our enslaved brothers and sisters in thrall. While the slave labored for his or her master, some amount of food, clothing, and shelter were guaranteed to keep him or her alive. Now, after paying billions in debt service, African societies are still expected to provide health care, food, clothing, education, shelter, transport, and other necessities for the people. While the continent cries out for investment just to maintain present inadequate standards, outflows of resources to creditors means that we are actually investing in the already affluent countries, as we did during slavery and colonialism. And the same thing is true in the diaspora. We live or survive or try to survive in the ghetto, and even there we are not safe because they are saying we should be thrown out of this country because we have no right to be here. In the affluent societies of the USA and Western Europe, our people live below the poverty line and are unfairly represented in government. Bernie Grant and the other black MPs, there should be many more people in the parliament. They are not enough to represent the interests of the number of black people we have in this country. And you notice that every time Bernie opens his mouth and talks about his constituents, there is something in the sun. I don't know if any of you here are sun reporters. Tomorrow we may see something about Bernie Grant, Barney Bernie. Says Queen's gold is stolen. Queen Jules are Grand Jules are set. And the sun, well, yeah. While Americans of European descent enjoy the highest standard of living in the world, Americans of African descent rank number 31 alongside Barbados. Okay, there was a table listing the standards of living of people in the world. White Americans have the highest standards of living in the world. Black Americans rank number 31 next to Barbados. But at least America documents the crimes committed against our people. You do not find these statistics in the United Kingdom or France. We cannot even tell quantitatively what they're doing to support deposit. To trace its historical condition of our present situation so that we can change it. If we do not trace this cause, we are going to be dealing with symptoms. All these things Bernie talked about, affirmative action and anti-racism and so on and so forth. Okay? These are dealing with symptoms. And in many cases, they're dealing with the symptoms in such a way that it is making the situation worse. You had a march down into the south of London the other day. There were some people who the police and the media said were anarchists, were this and that and the other. They wanted to do something, I want to say to the public what they wanted to do to the bookshop, the so-called bookshop of the BNC. For God's sake, if you want to do something to a place like that, do you want to do it in a march of 40,000 people? When the BNC wants to top off one of us or do something to one of us, or to do something to one of our houses, or to kill one of our children, do they wait until they march, a public march is going to be announced on the BBC and ITV, that they're going to attack and kill a little boy in South London? They don't do that. So are these people serious or not? Okay? Are they acting in our behalf, in our name? Okay, if you want to do something about the BNC, don't announce it on ITV or Skype. Our problems lie in our history, not in our genes. They did not begin yesterday, and they will not be dealt with tomorrow. Just as we fought against slavery and colonialism, we will continue to fight against contemporary forms of the same disease. Okay? We always hear about William Wilberforce. We always hear about Gladstone and all these things. We don't hear about Nana Sam Sharp and all these people who fought against the slave trade and made the abolition of slavery take place much earlier than it would have. Bernie, who is a parliamentarian, he can check in the handcuffs and find out the way that members of parliament were talking about the slave trade in the 19th century. They were saying, oh, let's not go too far. Oh, we don't want to cause this and that and the other. Oh, we have to compensate the slave owners. There's nothing in Anderson which says that we must compensate the slaves. There's nothing that says we must compensate Angola or Nigeria or Ghana or the Gambia or Jamaica. We must compensate the criminals at the expense of the victims. Until we reverse this perversion of history, each time we walk on the street and these people look at us, and unfortunately, not just these people, but some of our own people look at us and say, oh, these people, why don't they get on their bikes? Why don't they pull themselves up by their bootstraps? I had a debate by a lady whose name I will not mention on the BBC about 2 years ago. And she was telling me that, oh, we can't be talking about reparations. We should just get on our bike and put our slaves, put ourselves up by our bootstraps. And I can tell you that this lady, she sounded like a queen. I didn't say you said. The reparations movement seeks to preserve and forward the gains of the early struggle against racism and colonialism. To make Africa progress into the next century and beyond, and to make our continent and its shattered people one and whole again. Reparations, meaning to repair, combines morality with logic and historical necessity by claiming the right of the injured to compensation. If history demonstrates that Africans have been injured through slavery and colonialism, and if morality demands that injury be compensated, then the logic of the reparations movement is established alongside its morality. We have a historical right to compensation. We have a moral right to compensation. Why are Africans of all the world's injured people not considered worthy of compensation? Why has none of our torturers said we Of course, we're not talking about seeking revenge against anybody. We're not talking about enslaving white people, or yellow people, or green people, or purple people. I can assure you that I wouldn't want to have Norman Tebbit or Dennis Beacon or Beckton or whatever his name is as a slave. I wouldn't want to have Winston Churchill working on any plantation for me. And I certainly wouldn't want to have him as a house slave. We have suffered from racism for the past 5 or 6 centuries. We do not want to justify racism by being racist ourselves. What we want is to let all of you, regardless of your color, realize that we belong to the same race, human race. A racist is not just a misguided person or a vicious person or an ignorant person. A racist is a pervert, because a racist is looking at another human being and thinking, this is not a human being. And human beings are human beings because they're able to recognize humanity in others. If you look at a person, and because they're white, or black, or purple, or pink, you say, oh, they're not human. It is you who are human. And it is you who need to be sorted out. Your brain, as well as your body, need to be sorted out. Now, of course, we know we have the habit of, okay, in Nigeria, Hausa, and the Yoruba, in London, maybe those from Barbados, or from Ghana, or from Jamaica, or those who are conservatives and those who are labor, we start arguing with each other, quarreling with each other. In the reparations movement, we do not have any grounds for saying that, okay, people who are here in the UK or in the US were the victims of slavery. And it is the people in Africa who sent these people into slavery. We don't have any basis for that. I know that right here in this room there are people who might think that because they are or they come from the United States or something, they have a grudge against Africa because Africans sold them into slavery. I have been in Africa for 8 years, and I've been to all the countries on the west coast of Africa, all over the place, all the way from Algeria, all the way down to Angola. I also know that there are Africans who believe that blacks outside the continent, they are not as good as Africans because they were slaves. This is a result of the brainwashing that they have gone through and we have gone through over the years. In Africa, I try to put out those people, and if I'm here and people think that way, I will also try to sort them out mentally, please, not physically. So if there are no grounds for conflict between the races in the reparations movement, there is even less ground for division between continental Africans and those in the diaspora. As the discussion of slavery, colonialism, and racism below will show, we were all victims of these inhuman forces, with equal rights to redress and compensation. For those Africans who collaborated with the conquerors, we pray forgiveness, just as we forgive the children of those who enslaved us, many of whom now express sorrow for the misdeeds of their ancestors. The slave traders were only interested in individuals in their prime, the most productive in the society. Their loss had a devastating impact on the societies from which they were plucked. Most of these societies have not recovered precisely because they were not compensated for their loss. Yet this loss for subsistence agricultural economy was worse than the loss by an industrialized economy of all the technicians, engineers, doctors, and production workers. Suppose Saddam Hussein had conquered Britain and took all the technicians, all the doctors, all the engineers. Well, I won't mention the politicians. As slaves, and kept knows what Africa's economy would be like today if its title had not been ripped out by slavery and colonialism? What is Africa's $300 billion debt compared to the colossal wealth plundered from her in the past 6 centuries? According to the historian Bartholomew, captives were taken only if they were young and healthy and of sound physique. They were those not only most able to have children, but also most able to do productive work. The ground for economic development, in other words, was continually undermined. Then he goes into describing how the slaves were treated when they were captured. After the slaves are brought from inland, that is after over 50% of them have died in the process of capture and transportation to the coast, they are put in a sort of prison, built to receive them near the beach. Then they are taken out to a large open space where the surgeons from the slaving ships examine every part of them, men and women being stark naked. The pictures they show us all the time of Africans, all these savages, you know, they were going around naked. We were fully clothed. It is the slave master, the slave captor, who tore us our clothes off and made us naked. We were wearing clothes long before they did. And you see many of them even today, not wearing much clothes anyway. Those found to be sound and good were put on one side. The way you handle bananas or oranges when you're picking them in Caribbean and exporting them to Europe. Pick out those which are good and those which are bad and separate. And the export ones are ones which are special. That's what they did to us. The rejected being those about 35 years of age or defective in their features. And this is most unfortunate. Or grown gray. Or otherwise imperfect. So all our people here with gray hairs, they would have left us by the side because they said we're useless. The good and sound are marked on the breast, with a red hot iron. Don't ask whether they use anesthetics. They didn't, because they treated us just like animals. Imprinting the mark of the French, English, or Dutch companies, so that each buyer may distinguish his own. In the boats, the captives were all enclosed under grated hatchways between decks. The space was so low that they sat between each other's legs, and this is a journey, remember, of over a month. Just imagine. And stowed so close together that there was no possibility of lying down or at all changing their position by night or by day. We must praise these young people in Greenpeace and the NSPC when they complain the way that calves and sheep are transported in these big lorries. A horrible journey of 8 hours they're going to be taking and they're packed so close together. Okay, praise the humanity of these young people, but ask them why they don't remember that just over 100 years ago we were treated much worse. We are packed much more close together than sheep. And our own journey did not take 8 hours, or 12 hours, or 8 days. We were on that journey for weeks and months. How some of us survived, I just don't know. Most had no more than 1 square foot. 1 square foot. Just imagine 1 square foot. These chairs are about 2 square feet. Most had no more than 1 square foot of sitting space for weeks on end, and all suffered from an acute shortage of drinking water. Okay, weeks on end, people confined in this space. This is what slavery is, and this is what people are saying, oh, it was a long time ago. Why don't we face issues of today? Okay, I don't need to go through how they treated us in the colonial period because it was very close to what they did to us in slavery. Let me just give you one example. This is in the Congo. You know the Belgian thing. Congo is not the year. It's the second biggest country. It is almost 3 million square kilometers. It would fit most of Western Europe into the year. This is the report of a missionary, a white missionary, an American missionary. It's a son who wrote about what happened less than 100 years ago. It is blood-curdling to see the soldiers returning in hands of the slain, hands, human hands, and to find the hands of young children amongst the bigger ones, evidencing their bravery. The rubber from this district has cost hundreds of lives. And the scenes I have witnessed, while unable to help the oppressed, have been almost enough to make me wish I were dead. When Bernie talks about the crown jewels and so on, you saw when this Belgian king that just died was being buried. You saw all these fantastic clothes and jewels that these people wore to that funeral. All these were at the expense of children whose hands were amputated, and soldiers were carrying them around in bunches like bananas, showing the number of people they had killed in the process of collecting rubber. This is not 10,000 years ago. This is not 1,000 years ago. This is less than 100 years ago. These are the things that we cannot forget. The Jewish people will never let anyone forget what happened to them in the Holocaust. They never let us forget what happened to them in Egypt, what the Philistines did to them 3,000 years ago. Let us not tell anybody that we are going to forget. Unfortunately, some of us have forgotten. Let me remind you, and please never forget that there were soldiers less than 100 years ago carrying around bunches of children's hands the way you carry bunches of bananas, and that this was to get rubber from the so-called Belgian Congo, and this was what made the wealth of Belgium, it is what made the wealth of France, it is what made the wealth of the United Kingdom. Okay? So when they look at you and say, what are you doing here? Go back to where you come from. Or even worse, if they have a plank of wood, they knock you over the head and tell you the same. So today, of course, we're still being victimized. We're still being beaten senseless. Look at Rodney King. Millions of people saw these people beating him almost to death. But against the evidence of your own eyes, they said, oh. They didn't say this time we are only obeying orders. What they said was we're just doing it according to the manual of the police. This is how to deal with some nigger. Up is a nigger who won't behave himself. Okay, so we have Angola, we have Mozambique, we have Somalia. Killing continues, exploitation continues. If we don't recognize the historical foundation of what is happening to us in the United Kingdom, in France, in Angola, in Mozambique, or anywhere else, in Los Angeles, this will continue to happen to us for the next 1,000 years or 5,000 years. Now, the legal basis of reparations are just summarized. The justification for reparations is firmly grounded in international law and is not mitigated by the fact that the